This is number five. However flawed the studies, the Hawthorne research set the stage for intense interest in the social dimension of human behavior and organizations. The key to productivity at that point appeared to lie in showing greater concern for workers so that they would feel more satisfied with their jobs and be willing to produce more. Emphasis was placed on building more collaboration and cooperative relationships between supervisors and workers. Consequently, managers now needed social skills in addition to technical skills. They also required a better understanding of how to make workers feel more satisfied with their jobs. While the Hawthorne studies provide some clues, managers needed more definite guidance. Two major theorists, Abraham Maslow and Douglas McGregor, were among those who came forward with ideas that managers found helpful. Abraham Maslow, his dates are 1908 to 1970, received his doctorate in psychology from the University of Wisconsin and eventually became chairman of the psychology department at Brandeis University. He developed a theory of motivation that was based on three assumptions about human nature. First, human beings have needs that are never completely satisfied. Second, human action is aimed at fulfilling the needs that are unsatisfied at a given point in time. Third, needs fit into a somewhat predictable hierarchy, ranging from basic, lower-level needs at the bottom to high-level needs at the top. The hierarchy outlined by Maslow has five levels of needs. These are the physiological, which would be the lowest, safety needs, belongingness, esteem, and self-actualization, which is the highest. Self-actualization. These needs refer to the requirement to develop our capabilities and to reach our full potential. Maslow's work dramatized to managers that workers have needs beyond the basic requirement of earning money to put a roof over their heads. This concept conflicted with the views of scientific management, which emphasized the importance of pay. Of all the management-related theories, Maslow's hierarchy of needs theory is probably the best known among managers today. The movement toward having managers think of workers in a new light was also given impetus by the work of Douglas McGregor, his dates 1906 to 1964. McGregor earned a doctorate at Harvard and spent most of his career as a professor of industrial management at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. A six-year stint as president of Antioch College led him to realize that the notion of trying to have everyone like the boss, that is, maintaining good human relations, offered inadequate guidance to managers. To fill the void, he developed the concept of Theory X versus Theory Y, a dichotomy dealing with the possible assumptions that managers make about workers. McGregor felt that such assumptions exert a heavy influence on how managers operate. Theory X managers tend to assume that workers are lazy. They need to be coerced. They have little ambition, and they are focused mainly on security needs. In contrast, Theory Y managers assume that workers do not inherently dislike work, that they are capable of self-control, that they have the capacity to be creative and innovative, and generally have higher-level needs that are often unmet on the job. McGregor believed that managers who hold Theory X assumptions are likely to treat workers accordingly. Hence, such a manager sets up elaborate controls and attempts to motivate strictly through economic incentives. As a result, workers are likely to respond in a manner that reinforces the manager's original assumptions. In contrast, managers with Theory Y assumptions have the potential for integrating individual goals with organizational goals. McGregor believed this integration could occur if managers give workers latitude in performing their tasks, encourage creativity and innovation, minimize the use of controls, and attempt to make the work more interesting and satisfying in regard to higher-level needs. Under such conditions, workers are likely to exhibit greater commitment to organizational goals because these goals coincide more closely with their own goals. McGregor understood, however, that some relatively immature and dependent workers might require greater controls at first in order to develop the maturity needed for the theory Y approach. Like Maslow's hierarchy, McGregor's Theory X and Theory Y approach help managers develop a broader perspective on the nature of workers and new alternatives for interacting with them. The innovative ideas of both men had an intuitive appeal to managers searching for ways for operating more effectively and efficiently. Their theories became extremely popular and, of course, are still widely applied today. The Theory X assumptions are really three. Number one, the average person dislikes work and will try to avoid it. Number two, most people need to be coerced, controlled, directed, and threatened with punishment to get them to work toward organizational goals. Number three, the average person wants to be directed. He shuns responsibility, has little ambition, and he seeks security above all. Again, those are Theory X assumptions. Now, what about Theory Y assumptions? Six things come to the top. Number one, most people do not inherently dislike work. The physical and mental effort involved is a natural part of human existence, as natural as play or rest. Number two, people will exercise self-direction and self-control to reach goals to which they are committed. External control and threat of punishment are not the only means for ensuring effort toward these goals. Number three, commitment to goals is a function of the rewards available, particular rewards that satisfy esteem and self-actualization needs. Number four, when conditions are favorable, the average person learns not only to accept, but also to seek responsibility. Number five, many people have the capacity to exercise a high degree of creativity and innovation in solving organizational problems. And number six, the intellectual potential of most individuals is only partially utilized in most organizations. You look at those two lists, the three assumptions of the Theory X, the six assumptions of the Theory Y, and I think probably you see very practical applications for management work today in Christian organizations. Maslow, McGregor, and others who helped develop the human relations viewpoint tried to show that there was an alternative to the classical school's rational economic perspective of workers. They depicted workers as social creatures who have a variety of needs to be met on the job. Still, the picture that they drew was fairly general and somewhat simplistic. It often left managers uncertain about the specific actions that they should take and the implications of such actions. They need for a more complex view of this work situation led to the rise of behavioral science perspectives. The behavioral science approach emphasizes scientific research as the basis for developing theories about human behavior and organization. These theories can be used to establish practical guidelines for managers. It draws on findings from a variety of disciplines, including management, psychology, sociology, anthropology, and even economics. Concepts are thoroughly tested in business organizations and sometimes in a laboratory setting before they are announced as viable approaches for managers. The ultimate aim of the behavioral science approach is to develop theories that managers can use as guides in asserting various situations and in deciding on appropriate actions. Since humans themselves are complex, and their interaction with others are even more so, the quest for an understanding of organizations and their members is an ongoing activity of considerable challenge. One of the other aspects as we consider these pioneering ideas in management and the various approaches that have floated to the top, as it were, through the work of these individuals, we've noticed, of course, the pre-classical contributors. We looked then at the classical viewpoint. In classical, you have the idea of scientific management. You also have bureaucratic management. You have administrative management. We noticed then the behavioral viewpoint. We saw some of the early behaviorists, Hugo Munstenberg, for example, Mary Parker Follett. we noticed the three Hawthorne studies and some of the things that came out of the Hawthorne studies, especially moving into this area of the human relations movement and the work of Abraham Maslow and Douglas McGregor. This, of course, led into the behavioral science approach. We want to look now at what is known as the quantitative management viewpoint. The quantitative management viewpoint emerged as a major force during World War II. The sheer magnitude of the war effort caused the British and then the United States military services to turn to quantitative methods for help in determining the most effective use of resources. For example, one set of quantitative studies by the United States Navy led to eliminating the catch-as-catch-can method that airplanes had used in searches for enemy vessels. Instead, quantitative analysis produced a pattern for such airplane searches that not only reduced the number of search planes needed for a given area, but also increased the coverage. Aside from conserving scarce resources, the new search pattern in the South Atlantic led to the seizure of enemy ships carrying valuable cargo that significantly aided the Allied effort. This and other important applications of quantitative methods gained the attention of business organizations, particularly as quantitative specialists found jobs in non-military related organizations after the war. The quantitative management viewpoint focuses on the use of mathematics, statistics, and information aids to support managerial decision-making and organizational efforts. Three main branches have evolved. These are management science, operations management, and management information systems. Management science is an approach aimed at increasing decision effectiveness through the use of sophisticated mathematical models and statistical methods. Now, keep in mind that this term is not synonymous with the term scientific management, which we mentioned earlier. Another name commonly used for management science is operations research. The increasing power of computers has greatly expanded the possibilities for using the mathematical and statistical tools of management science in organizations. Computers can quickly accomplish the extensive calculations that are often required. Management science was applied, for example, at Avon, the well-known maker of beauty, healthcare, and fashion jewelry products. Group Vice President for Planning and Development, Robert W. Pratt, used statistical methods to analyze the implications of changing the company's common practice of offering heavy product discounts to generate larger orders. His results indicated that the ailing company could improve profits significantly by lowering the discounts, even if doing so meant smaller average orders per salesperson. This was part of scientific management. And then there's operations management. Operations management is the function or field of expertise that is primarily responsible for managing the production and delivery of an organization's products and services. It includes such areas as inventory management, work scheduling, production planning, facilities location design, and quality assurance. Operations management specialists are quantitatively oriented tools such as forecasting, inventory analysis, materials requirements, planning systems, networking models, statistical quality control methods, and project planning, as well as control techniques. Operations management is often applied to manufacturing settings in which various aspects of product production need to be managed, including designing the production process, purchasing raw materials, scheduling employees to work, and storing and shipping the final products. And then there is what is known as management information systems. The term management information systems refers to the field of management that focuses on designing and implementing computer-based information systems for use by management. Such systems turn raw data into information that is useful in various levels of management responsibility. In many industries, computer-based information systems are becoming a powerful competitive weapon because organizations are able to handle large amounts of information in new and better ways. Well, what are some of the contemporary viewpoints? as we have worked our way through the historical development of management thought and theory, the evolution and pioneering ideas of management philosophy, where are we today? Well, perhaps we could say that while the classical, the behavioral, the quantitative approaches continue to make contributions to management, other viewpoints have also emerged. These are contemporary in the sense that they represent major innovations in ways of thinking about management. Two of the most important contemporary viewpoints are the systems and contingency theories. In addition, at any given point in time, there are emerging views that influence the development of management field, even though they have not reached the status of an enduring viewpoint as yet. The systems theory approach is based on the notion that organizations can be visualized as systems. A system is a set of interrelated parts that operate as a whole in pursuit of common goals. The systems approach as applied to organizations is based largely on the work in biology and the physical sciences. In this particular time in our discussion, we consider major systems components such as the open versus the closed system and some of the characteristics of an open system. According to the systems approach, an organizational system has four major components. Inputs are the various human, material, financial, equipment, and informational resources required to produce the goods and services. Transformational processes are the organization's managerial and technological abilities that are applied to convert inputs into outputs. Outputs are the products, services, and other outcomes produced by the organization. Feedback is information about results and organizational status relative to the environment. So you have these four major components in the systems approach. You have inputs, transformational processes, outputs, and feedback. The systems approach has a number of advantages. First, it can analyze systems at different levels. For example, systems expert Jay Miller has outlined a typological of hierarchical levels of living systems, ranging from an individual human cell, including atoms and molecules, up to the supranatural system, consisting of two or more societies. For the most part, managers consider the organism, the individual, the group, the organization, and society levels, although the growing global emphasis is bringing the supranational level increasingly into play. Second, the systems view provides a framework for assessing how well the various parts of an organization interact to achieve a common purpose. Third, it emphasizes that a change in one part of the system may affect other parts. In thinking about the interrelationships among parts in an organization, you might visualize the parts that are interconnected as with rubber bands. A pull on one part may very well affect the position of others. Fourth, the systems approach considers how an organization interacts with its environment. The factors outside the organization that can affect its operation can certainly be a part of the system's understanding. In order to consider the environment adequately, an organization needs to operate as an open system. Systems can be open systems or closed systems. An open system is one that operates in continual interaction with its environment. Through such interaction, the system takes in new impetus and learns about how its outputs are received by various important outside elements. In contrast, a closed system does little or no interacting with its environment and receives little feedback. From a practical point of view, all organizations are open systems to some extent, since it is virtually impossible for an organization to operate for a significant period of time without some interaction with the environment. Still, organizations can vary tremendously in the degree to which they operate along the open-closed system continuum. If an organization operates too closely to the closed end, it might not find out about important environmental factors that can affect it until the problems are major. Organizations that operate closer to the open end of the continuum share certain characteristics that help them survive and prosper. Three major characteristics of the open system are negative entropy, E-N-T-R-O-P-Y, differentiation, and synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y. Entropy refers to the tendency of systems to decay over time. In contrast, negative entropy is the ability of open systems to bring new energy in the form of inputs and feedback from the environment in order to delay or arrest this entropy. Differentiation is the tendency of open systems to become more complex. The increased complexity usually stems from the addition of specialized units to handle particular troublesome or challenging parts of the environment. Specialized units or positions are also added in response to new organizational tasks or in an attempt to increase controls over the existing task. Closed systems are less likely to recognize the need for differentiation or may differentiate in inappropriate ways. The third major characteristic of open systems is synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y, the ability of the whole to equal more than the sum of its parts. This means that an organization ought to be able to achieve its goals more effectively and efficiently than would be possible if the parts operated separately. According to the system's viewpoint, managers are likely to be more successful if they attempt to operate their units and organizations as open systems that are carefully attuned to the factors in the environment that could significantly affect them.